美国总统拜登宣布向乌克兰提供额外军事援助，扩大乌东防御系统。上海封城期间物流困难，政府和私营部门应扮演何种角色？美国最新情报称，中国研发的导弹能够打击美国的卫星，阻断卫星通信。各位观众朋友，大家好，欢迎收看《美国观察》，我是林森。美国财政部长耶伦说，美国及其盟友不会对破坏制裁的行动无动于衷。盖洛普全球领导地位排名，德国继续位居第一，美国出现回升，中俄相当。美国一家太空技术公司首次成功地将四位私人乘客送入国际空间站。今天的《美国观察》带您一同关注。俄罗斯国防部星期三说，奋战在被俄军团团包围的孤城马里乌波尔的乌克兰第36海军陆战旅的1026名军人缴械投降，投降者中包括162名军官和47名女兵。俄罗斯声称已经投降的乌克兰第36海军陆战旅星期一曾经表示，由于部队弹尽粮绝，正准备拼死做最后的抵抗。乌克兰总参谋部表示，俄军正在对马里乌波尔亚速钢铁厂所在的工业区发动进攻，但是乌克兰国防部一位发言人表示，他没有任何有关乌军投降的信息。乌克兰总统泽连斯基表示，俄军正在当地调集成千上万的部队，准备发动新一轮的攻击。4月13号，美国总统拜登宣布向乌克兰提供额外8亿美元的军事援助，扩大针对俄罗斯在乌东地区更广泛袭击的防范系统。另外，拜登总统星期二以种族灭绝来形容俄罗斯在乌克兰的行为，不过他同时补充说，这要通过法律程序来进行认定。详细情况我们请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
是林森，美国总统拜登呢，在星期二的晚上两度以种族灭绝来形容乌克兰的局势。那么他在面对媒体提问的时候呢，他说他会用种族灭绝这个字来形容，是因为越来越多证据显示俄罗斯正在试图抹杀乌克兰的这个身份认同。那么他也表示呢，这个认定必须要透过这个国际上的律师的法律的认定。那么在星期三的白宫新闻简报会上呢，白宫发言人沙奇是呼应了拜登总统的说法。我们看一下沙奇怎么说。
And we've also seen, I think, from the beginning of this, Kremlin rhetoric and Russian media deny the national identity of the Ukrainian people. And the Kremlin has launched a full-scale assault on the sovereignty of the Ukrainian state and its people. So the president was speaking to what we all see, what he feels is clear as day in terms of the atrocities happening on the ground. As he also noted yesterday, of course, there will be a legal process that plays out in the courtroom. But he was speaking to what he has seen on the ground, what we've all seen in terms of the atrocities on the ground.
而拜登总统与乌克兰总统泽连斯基在星期三呢，两个人也谈话将近一个小时。那么之后呢，美国国防部就宣布，从这个美国国会在3月的时候通过给乌克兰援助法案的136亿美元当中，拿出将近8亿美元来提供这个乌克兰军事的这个武器。那么国防部表示呢，这些武器当中还包括了美国制造的弹簧刀无人机，说呢这个无人机可以携带炸药、还有摄像头以及探测机等等。国防部官员说呢，只需要两天的训练就可以上场作战。那么这个白宫发言人沙奇也表示呢，美国一直有在征询乌克兰的需求，那么包括乌克兰说呢需要直升机，所以在这一次的军事援助当中也会包括了直升机。此外呢，美国贸易代表戴奇在接受的这个《浮华世界》杂志专访的时候，他表示说，中国将对我们经济产生的影响远超过我们今天所面临的俄罗斯问题。那么针对这个沙奇的说法呢，今天美国之音就来询问了白宫发言人沙奇，说是否会担心呢，在面对乌俄战事而来影响到美国对中国的所带来的挑战的关注，以及所需要来使用的资源。对此呢，沙奇表示不会影响。我们看一下白宫发言人沙奇今天怎么说。
We're not. I mean, how the U.S. government is set up, as you know, is that we have experts and in every area, right, working simultaneously at the same time. Yes, the war in Ukraine is a big issue that we're very focused on. This president is very focused on. There's an entire team focused on Asia at the State Department, the Defense Department, the National Security Team, every single day that is not involved in that war. So I can assure you and assure everybody that we are able to walk, chew gum, and do multiple layers of deployment.
那沙奇在访问当中也表示呢，这次乌俄战争的一个意义就是美国是跟盟友伙伴们一起合作协调来制裁俄罗斯，是在对中贸易战上面呢，也需要与盟友伙伴一起来协调。林森，
好的，感谢黄耀毅在白宫的连线报道。好，继续关注新闻。美国财政部长耶伦星期三在美国智库大西洋理事会的会议上说，乌克兰战争和对俄罗斯的制裁突出了中国的关键作用。他警告其他国家破坏对俄罗斯实施制裁将会面临后果。美联社的报道说，目前并没有任何国家对这些制裁进行破坏，但是中国对西方的制裁发出了批评，引发人们担心中国有可能会这样做。耶伦强调，世界如何看待中国以及中国进一步推动经济一体化的意愿，很可能要看中国对美国呼吁针对俄罗斯采取坚决行动做出何种反应。
Whatever China's geopolitical aims and strategies, we see no benign interpretation of Russia's invasion, nor of its consequences for the international order.China cannot expect the global community to respect its appeals to the principles of sovereignty and territorial integrity in the future if it does not respect these principles now when it counts. China has recently affirmed a special relationship with Russia. I fervently hope that China will make something positive of this relationship and help to end this war.Going forward, it will be increasingly difficult to separate economic issues from broader considerations of national interest, including national security. The world's attitude towards China and its willingness to embrace further economic integration may well be affected by China's reaction to our call for resolute action on Russia.
目光转向中国，因新冠疫情陷入大规模封控的上海，现在民众吃饭问题成了许多人的头等大事。以科技发达、生活便利著称的中国金融之都遭遇饥饿困境，政府是在帮助居民解决买菜问题，还是在给物流添堵？那么有关这一话题，我们邀请美国之音记者许宁来和大家一起梳理相关的原因。许宁，你好。
林森你好。
首先介绍一下现在啊，刚才我们提到这个上海民众啊，在封控当中啊，吃饭啊买菜都成了问题了。那么他们是怎么样来解决这个买菜问题和吃饭问题的？
是从本周一开始，上海全市按照封控区、管控区、防范区这三类实施了分区分级差异化的防控管理。根据这一规定呢，封控区的居民必须足不出户，管控区的居民仍不能出小区，而防范区的居民可以在所属街镇范围内活动，但是仍然严格限制人员聚集的规模，以防对于防范区内的人员呢，一周需要开展两次的抗原检测，如果出现了阳性感染则需要调整为封控区。截至本周二，大部分的上海居民都是处于严格的封控状态之下。官方的数字显示，封控区涉及的人口数量达到1501万人，管控区的人口数量呢也有178万人，防范区的人口数量有480万人。对于封控区和管控区这1600多万无法出家门或出小区的居民来说，网上订餐和订菜是非常重要的途径。从三月初开始，上海的徐汇区的疫情开始出现，后来变得严重之后，许多小区被封控，在手机 APP 上网购的需求激增。对于大多数上海居民来说，通过叮咚买菜、盒马、美团这些主流手机应用程序 成功下单买菜变得非常的困难。这些网络订餐服务常常是显示出现了运力紧张、网络拥堵或者商品受限等问题。在这样的情况下，通过微信群团购直接与卖家接洽，成为许多社区的主流买菜的方式。根据英国金融时报中文网的报道，最新的政策是上海的防疫要求居民不得自行组织团购群，而是需要由居委会牵头组织，但是居委会却无法亲自组织这么多的团购群，于是许多小区的各类团购群呢，都是需要挂靠在居委会的名下。
嗯，张杰，刚才你提到现在这上海的居民啊，吃饭买菜面临了这么多的实际的困难，那么上海现在面临这种极端的供不应求或者叫物流不通畅的情况，它的主要的原因都是什么？那么政府在这其中啊，应该它扮演了什么样的角色？
可以说上海目前得到的物资供应并不是不够充分，但是许多分析认为呢，政府当局人为设置的官僚程序在很大程度上阻碍了上海地区的物流。由于疫情管控的许多菜市场被迫关停，许多附近的农户只能眼睁睁地看着蔬菜腐烂。上海政府的前一阶段设置的通行障碍也阻碍了送货劳动力的有效流动。我们来听听德国莫卡托中国研究所分析师瓦莱利在这个问题上怎么说。
What?The last mile delivery is where it is crucial. People bringing the goods to those who need it. That's a huge shortage because workers were stuck at home. They have been locked down. Or the workers who are in the periphery areas of Shanghai, for example, on the outskirts of Shanghai near to Zhejiang or Ningbo, they can't enter and add to...or help the labor shortage because there's this massive bureaucratic process for them to get approval, for them to get their health passes. They need to be tested every day. So basically this really, you know, contributed to the massive severe shortage. And finally, it's something that I also alluded to from the beginning, is the additional bureaucracy imposed by the local authorities or the authorities who have taken over Shanghai right now.Where you have additional paperwork for workers, trucks, companies to seek approval to get clearance before they're allowed to move, you know, groceries into Shanghai or for them to be allowed to drive their trucks on certain roads.
许宁，我们注意到从去年开始啊，中国政府就一直在收紧对比如说阿里巴巴啊、滴滴出行啊等一些科技公司的这样的一些管制，限制他们的网络服务平台的扩张。那么经过了这次的危机之后，政府能不能意识到就是说私营部门在解决民生问题当中的作用，去放松对这些科技公司的限制呢？
是在我的采访中呢，纽约的一家资产管理公司的量化投资专家任立倩，他是这样表示，他说电商平台在上海抗议中积极的出席政府的新闻发布会，证明了中国政府对私营部门服务功效的重新审视和肯定。我们来听听他怎么说。
I think before they were still considered, you know, capitalist companies just for, you know, for profit.But now I think it's becoming much more clear that these companies are very essential to China's economy, even as an infrastructure in days like this. Shanghai really helps, you know, many Chinese to realize it, is that first, private enterprises is good and it's better in many days than delivering than government planning. I think Shanghai didn't appreciate, even though Shanghai is really the most commercial place in China, but compared to Shenzhen, which I believe is even more private, you know, and commercial driven, Shenzhen have shown how to do it by, you know, the government's job is not to deliver the goods. The government's job is to help the companies so they can deliver the goods better. Well, you know, at the same time,helping people who are poor and who are underprivileged.
好，感谢美国之音记者许宁的报道。 美国国防情报局就太空安全挑战发表了最新的报告，称中国和俄罗斯正在大力的研发可以用来打击美国卫星、阻断雷达通信的太空武器，认为中俄两国向太空轨道投送的资源在过去短短两年内增加了70%。国防情报局表示，自从太空安全挑战上一份报告2019年发表以来，美国的太空竞争对手在所有的重要领域都加快了行动的步伐，扩大了活动范围，这些领域包括通讯、遥感、飞行以及科技成果展示。国防情报局一位高级情报分析员星期二在五角大楼的新闻简报会上说，中国研制出了有能力击毁美国卫星或者部署阻挡卫星通信与全球定位系统的多款导弹。俄罗斯入侵乌克兰导致美俄在太空的合作关系宣告结束。美国太空探索技术公司 SpaceX 4月8号首次成功地将4位私人乘客送入了国际空间站。美国塞拉太空公司的追梦者太空飞机也将在今年年底担负起向国际空间站的运输任务。塞拉太空公司商业市场开发总监肯希尔茨接受了美国之音的专访。
Please give us an introduction about the Dream Chaser showcasing at CES 2022. What are its features?
Oh, sure. I'd love to do that. So the Dream Chaser space plane is essentially a space plane. That's Sierra Space Corporation. We're launching our first mission with the Dream Chaser at the end of this year, at the end of 2022, about December timeframe. It's our first mission of 7 missions to the International Space Station under a contract that we have with NASA. The mission objectives are to deliver cargo, science payloads, maybe spare parts to the International Space Station, and also return the same complement of cargo like that to the ground. It's a cargo-only vehicle. It's not a human-rated vehicle yet, but we've got plans for that as well.
How about the Life Habitat program? Could you tell us more about that? How is it going to facilitate humans' moon colonization and Mars transport?
Certainly. So the Dream Chaser space plane, think of that as a super important transportation infrastructure, logistics infrastructure. Our Life Habitat is a destination platform in space. So the Life Habitat, and Life, by the way, L-I-F-E, it's an acronym for Large Integrated Flexible Environment. The Life Habitat will essentially be an outpost in low Earth orbit at an altitude of between 400 and 600 kilometers. Its inclination of orbit will be 51.6 degrees, which covers roughly about 90% of the human habitated surface of the Earth. It looks like a 3-story building in space. When it's fully operational, we can house about 10 people in the habitat, and we can configure it, we can design it and tailor it to do all sorts of applications, whether it's research, manufacturing, maybe working with the biopharma industry. But we also have some really creative and new ways of using the Life Habitat: media, entertainment, advertising.
Some people say the Dream Chaser program is like a miniature of the Space Shuttle program. We know that the Space Shuttle program has developed enormously but got canceled eventually. So is it a good reference for your company when it comes to both successes and challenges?
We think it's a good reference in the sense that the concept of operations, the way that the Dream Chaser will be launched and the way that the Dream Chaser will return to Earth is very similar to the shuttle program. And we learned a lot from the heritage and the legacy of the shuttle program. However, we have achieved far better efficiencies in the way that the Dream Chaser space plane will function. Its reusability is very high. Its turnaround time from one mission to the next, very efficient. We can just do it in a few months if we needed to. So our cost to getting it on orbit is much less than what the shuttle is. So we think it's a far more efficient way to accomplish missions in low Earth orbit.
What are the similarities between the Dream Chaser program with aerospace programs developed in the U.S. as well as China and Russia? Also, for Dream Chaser program, is there any competitor in China?
Well, here in the United States, we have a number of competitors, and in the United States here, NASA has done a great job in leading the commercial sector to develop new technologies, and specifically transportation technologies, through various programs, including the Commercial Resupply Program and the Commercial Crew Program. Where essentially NASA's no longer the service provider. They're not providing the rockets and the capsules and the infrastructure to do all of those services. They're actually buying those from the private sector. So that's what the Dream Chaser space plane is all about. As a matter of fact, our NASA 7 missions are coming under the commercial resupply contract number 2. And so under that, the private sector has been able to mature and advance technologies to a point now where they have actually outpaced what the government has done in the past and are providing transportation services, logistics services in space that we've never seen before for both cargo and for crew. Competitors on the landscape right now, Northrop Grumman has been supplying the ISS for the better part of the last 8 or 9 years. SpaceX, we all know what SpaceX has done with their Falcon 9 and their Dragon cargo and crew capsule. And now Sierra Space, we're joining the fray with our Dream Chaser space plane, initially cargo. Very soon we will also have a crewed version of that. What we have seen coming out of other countries, China being one of those, they're advancing and being competitive in this arena too. We've just seen, as of late, over the last year or two, they've started to launch and assemble their own space station, for example. And they have their infrastructure, their transportation systems that are going to provide not only resupply of their space station in orbit, but they're also launching and returning their crew members, their Chinese astronauts up there. So competition from China's out there, and it's good, it's strong.
And we know that Sierra Space is working with Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin developing commercial flights as well. Is there, do you think that the public is ready for space trips, and when could we expect it to be more prevalent?
So yes, I think the public is ready to fly. I view space tourism, space flight participation, space flight experiences really as our industry now sort of raising the altitude of civil aerospace and public aerospace, right? I mean, if you think back to the advent of when commercial planes were flying people, right? It was a little scary, it was a little daunting, but people wanted it. The public wanted it, and as a result, industry responded. I think that's where we are today. I think right now the private sector is responding to demand of the public to want to go and experience space. And so I think that the technologies are out there for us to safely do that, and certainly Sierra Space is going to be part of that and compete.
Sierra Space is collaborating with NASA for unmanned flights to the International Space Station starting this year. Tell us more details about this, and what are Sierra Space's future plans besides commercial?
Absolutely. We are really excited about kicking off our contract with NASA with a fully operational flight later this year. We expect each mission we're going to deliver to the International Space Station just under 6,000 kilograms of research payloads, science payloads, new technology development, but also important resupply items, food items perhaps, different types of things that the crew needs in order to sustain their lives on orbit. At the same time, another very, very important aspect of the mission, and it's unique with the Dream Chaser space plane, is the ability to return those science payloads and cargo and maybe parts that need to be fixed from the ISS back to the Earth. In addition to returning to Earth, we will have a capability to dispose of things that need to get off of the International Space Station, because it's a closed, contained environment. You've got to take things off occasionally, right? If you don't take the trash out of the house, it gets messy. So we have the ability also to remove items from the ISS, put them into essentially what is a trash bin, if you will, which becomes an incinerator, burns up in the atmosphere as it returns, but then the space plane returns to the ground with that cargo on board. We can return just under 2,000, roughly about 1,500 kilograms from low Earth orbit to the surface of the Earth.
Space is no longer a domain of the government. Do you see a faster growth and development in the commercial arena, both technology and business-wise?
I do. It's a great point that you just made, that the domain of space is no longer pinned up by governments. And I fully anticipate that we're going to see an acceleration of an advancement in the technologies that the private sector is able to do. I think we're going to see a lot more advancement in new customer demand and new use, new use cases, new applications, new products that are going to come out of these technologies that, that the private sector is going to be driving towards. And I think that we'll also see an increased rate of speed as to how quickly these new technologies and applications can be operationalized. I also think we're going to see a lot more participants enter the fray here. I think that the number of launches and the number of vehicles operating space from here into the next decade is really going to take off at an accelerating rate.
How do you see the collaborations between the government and the private sectors?
It's vital that the government still be involved. I think that all nations around the globe, or most nations around the globe, still see a lot of strategic value and importance in maintaining a presence in low Earth orbit. I think that we certainly have that feeling here in the United States. We certainly want to, we have some national pride in maintaining what we think is U.S. leadership in that domain. I'm sure that other countries have a very similar feeling. I'm sure they have that feeling in China. And I think that competitive spirit and that national pride is actually a very healthy thing globally. As I said earlier in our conversation, I think there's a lot of collateral benefit from that healthy competition in wanting to advance technologies and presence in LEO. I think public-private partnerships, the private sector, providing good services and technologies to governments and the public sector is vital. I personally believe that the private sector can accomplish services and deliver products and technologies at a far more efficient, cost-effective way, and also in a very time-saving way. And I think governments can actually save and be much more efficient and be efficient with their taxpayer dollars or their government investment in these things and achieve higher return on their investment, higher value from partnering with the private sector. So I think public-private partnerships are going to be a huge component of all of this as we move forward.
China recommitted itself to completing its orbit space station by the end of this year and says it's planning more than 40 space launches in 2022. How do you see China's technology and development in space so far? Is it comparable to the U.S.? And how do the U.S. preserve the domain in space?
So I think China has done a great job over the last decade or so in advancing and accelerating their technology maturation and their ability to operate in space. And I think they want to continue on that pace, right? I still think they have a lot of important national objectives and strategic objectives that they're going to pursue in a very vigorous way. I think they're going to continue to try and develop their space station, that they're going to try to continue to advance their technologies associated with the infrastructure to do more advanced research on their station. I think that's an important aspect for them, and I think they've done a great job. I think here in the U.S., we've also done a great job. I mean, over the last decade, NASA has turned more to the private sector, and I think our advancements in this domain, the domain of in-space operations, is now being driven by and led by the private sector. I think that's different than what's occurring in China. I think what China's doing is still pretty much driven by the governmental systems there and the governmental enterprises that they run, whereas on our side, our governmental agency, NASA, is turning more and more to the private sector and having the goal of being a purchaser of these services from the private sector, as opposed to NASA in the government domain standing up all of these enterprises, having to maintain all of this service. And that comes with a lot of overhead and cost that's borne by our taxpayers here in this country. So from my standpoint as a United States citizen, I love the fact that our government agency, once again, public-private partnerships, it stimulates the economy, it stimulates employment, and I think it accelerates technology development. I think the private sector can do it faster. I think the private sector can do it more efficiently and effectively. I think the government and their requirements and their objectives benefit from that. The taxpayer benefits from it. We get more return on investment from our taxpayer dollars. So to sum that up, China's doing a great job. I think they're still pretty much government-led. I think U.S. is doing a great job. I think we're turning more to the private sector to lead us through the next several decades.
Does Sierra Space have some collaborations with the U.S. Space Force?
We do. We have some collaborations, not only with the U.S. Space Force, but other parts of our Department of Defense. Some of them are in technology maturation. Some of them are even related to medical applications. So, yes, we actually have a long heritage and legacy from our parent company, Sierra Nevada Corporation, who has had a long-standing